You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Little. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So welcome, Paul, from sunny Alderney in the Channel Islands, I believe, this week.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, it was tipping it down with rain yesterday, but it's brightened up a bit. So I've just hired an e-bike. So I thought, but my duties to the listeners here take precedence. So we'll carry on and do our video and then I can go cycling later.
Yeah, well, it's been belting down here. But luckily, it's had sunnier climbs over the last few weeks on the markets. And over the weekend, we obviously had a bit of back and forth between Trump and the EU. And I think tonight we've got NVIDIA's sort of like results coming out, that poster child of all things AI. But before we just sort of start beginning to run through some stocks, have you been buying or selling anything this last 7 days or so?
Just very small sort of minor swing trading type positions, really. I doubled up on Bloomsbury Publishing.
Oh, right.
Very small positions, though these are trivial, really. I just looked at it and thought, well, at 40p earnings, it's on about 12 or 13 times. That's probably trough earnings, yeah. Net cash balance sheet. So I think there's maybe a bit of upside on that, not a huge amount. I think that's the only significant trade I've done. There are loads and loads of things on my watch list, though, Paul. I mean, yeah. I doubt whether you've been doing much, have you? You don't really trade, do you?
No, I don't trade at all, and I'm still sort of licking my wounds from Argentex, but I have actually been voting against the proposed acquisition by IFX at their 2.49. I've done that this week, but just to alert investors on that, it's actually strangely quite difficult to do. Normally, it's a piece of cake to vote in a GM, but this time they've, for some reason, the board sent me instructions to vote online yesterday, which I did and voted against. And then they sent another resolution to ask me to vote against it. So I had to do it twice, which has meaning that everybody's having to do it twice. So they're not making it any easy for minorities to vote in this case. But anyway, regardless of that, let's see what happens. But okay, just in terms of things, stocks on the watch list, we came out, which is certainly in value territory. We've got Begbie's Traynor. We don't look at that often. It's sort of like insolvency practitioner, but it's also expanded into sort of like advisory into property and I think a bit of corporate finance anyway. Shares are still pretty cheap. I was looking at the sort of the PE ratio, and I think it's sort of, what is it? It's around about 9.4 times forward PE. You know what your thoughts on Begbie's are at all?
We like Begbie's a lot. Yeah, I've got my notes up in front of me here. It issued a trading update on the 23rd of May. So that was, middle late last week. All in line. No issues at all. The balance sheet's fine. It's self-funded a lot of acquisitions over the years. The core business, as you say, is an insolvency practitioner, which is a very high margin business. You know, it's a really high margin, high quality business insolvency is, because it's very, very difficult to get the required qualifications. So, fully qualified insolvency practitioners are very scarce, and it makes lovely margins. The core business makes an operating margin, I'm thinking it's well into the 20s in percentage terms. What are the shares, Paul? Are they still around a quid each?
Yeah, they're just south of a quid, yeah. They play a 4% dividend yield. It just looks sort of like H&T type stuff, as in, like, you know, one day we'll wake up and somebody's bought it.
Yeah, I mean, it's owner-managed still by Rick Traynor. At some point, obviously, I don't know when, but he's going to, I imagine, want to retire and effectively sell the business. But, it's neutral on net cash, net debt. Well, 0.9 million net cash, which is nothing really. Profit before tax, 23.5 million in line. This was for April 25. And they're confident in the outlook. They basically said as well that they've got good visibility of the order book, if you like. There's a lot of insolvency jobs, you know, can drag on for several years. So, and they've got a pipeline of more bolt-on acquisitions as well, all for a PE of 9. And yeah, as you say, over 4% yield as well, and self-funding acquisitions. I just think it's the wrong price. I don't understand why the market consistently, persistently undervalues Begbies, but it does.
Yeah, no, it's a decent market cap. It's 160 million. So if people wanted to buy a few, then they should be able to get liquidity quite easy, I would have thought.
Yeah, reasonably. And the other one, there's another listed one, isn't there? Begins with F. Can you remember the name?
Yes, FRP Advisory.
FRP Advisory. That is not quite as good value as Begbies, but they're the sort of next tier up in terms of size of jobs and prestige, if you like. I think they're both worth people having a look at. And you get your divvies while you hope for them to re-rate. And I mean, there'll be plenty of corporate insolvency work for years to come, I would imagine.
Yeah. Good. Okay, let's move to another one which is still cheap. It's about 10 and a half times PE. It's SDI, which is a sort of like a buy and build instrumentation business. I think it's trying to sort of be a blueprint for Judges Scientific, but a much smaller type business. The shares have rallied really hard over the last 4 weeks. But again, even that, they're still, as I say, 10 and a half times PE. I don't know if you've had a look at this one. It's supposed to be quite sort of like, you know, given it goes a lot into life sciences, this instrumentation, into R&D as well, it should have quite a lot of IPR.
Yeah, we like it. I mean, we look at everything. So, I missed the bottom on this. It was rather irritating, actually. It bottomed out around 50p. And then the chairman, Ken Ford, who's a great guy, we chat to him occasionally. We didn't speak to him, but we noticed he published an RNS of some fairly chunky buys, you know, not messing about type of director buys from him. And that was your signal. You know, I think when a director spends 50 grand plus or does several clusters of 50 grand plus buys in a small cap, they're not messing about. They're not doing that for PR reasons usually. Mm. So that was the signal. And I didn't act quick enough, so I missed it. They were up to 76p when I last looked on the 19th of May with an inline trading update for April 25. I think that reassures, because there had been problems last year with profit warnings. And they sounded upbeat about the order book as well at SDI, saying the order book was robust. Tariffs in the US is only 10% of their business, so they say no material impact. The balance sheet's okay. So we like it. We think the fall was overdone. But for me personally, now I've missed a 50% rally. I mean, a lot of the readers are saying the same thing. A lot of us are loath to buy something that's already bounced 50%, you know, and a lot of these things are drifting back down again as people bank profits. So I think for me personally, I think I've missed the short term trade on that, but I would certainly consider it on a sort of buy the dips type of list. Yeah. Going forward. Yeah.
Here's a scenario for you, Paul. If it hadn't have actually had a swan song or a swoon in April, hadn't have actually dipped to 50p and stayed at roughly around about 62, et cetera, and now has got up to 72 and was on a PE of 10 and a half. Would that have changed your view? It's just that because it's come from such a low point.
That's a good point. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So you're saying if we hadn't had that down and it was still at 62p, yes, I probably would be tempted to buy it. It's so difficult. I don't know what the listeners think, but we all have that quandary, don't you?
Yeah.
I suppose the guys who are happiest to buy are momentum traders, aren't they? They like to see breakouts on the chart. But we've had a lot of false breakouts on lots of things over the last year. So I think people are still scared of breakouts because quite often they drift back down again. We'll only know after the event which ones which ones stick. That's why it's so fascinating, this activity, isn't it? You just don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, good. Let's move to one which is a bit racier, actually. I think we've discussed it before, but they came out with a big contract announcement that they just started it, SRT Marine. They've got this €167 million Indonesia contract over 10 years, 2 years implementation, mainly sort of equipment getting into the Coast Guards, etc., and then 2 years servicing. I think they've also got another big one about that sort of, like, they've got £320 million sort of confirmed order book anyway, and about £1.2 billion apparently sort of pipeline. It does seem to be hitting its strides, but it has been around the mill. And is this a sort of, the guest question, is this a jam tomorrow, or is this actually now the inflection point?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? And funnily enough, one of my co-writers, Alan, who does our AI cartoon, actually mocked up a picture of a pot of jam with SRT Marine on it.
Oh, did he?
But his caption was, "It's jam today," which I thought was quite good. So, yeah, it does look like it's coming good, doesn't it? But I've just found with SRT in the past, I don't think I can give an independent view on it, because I'm just too battle scarred from serial disappointments over many years. Something always seems to go wrong with it, and so it's not for me. But as I say, I don't think I'm really capable of giving an independent view on that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. We've got a couple of comments from Peter T. He says, first of all, big congrats to you, Scotty, on your Substack. Great team of analysts and a good quality and respectful posters. So, and also a big cheer to Mr. C. He's asking also about any sort of like stocks on your specific watch list that you'd highlight to sort of like, you haven't quite pushed the button yet, or you're thinking about.
Well, I mean, there's absolutely loads. I mean, really, seriously, just loads and loads of them. Yeah. The best thing to do is just look at the things I mark green or amber green on Substack, and those, you know, you can, a spreadsheet of all of them is available to premium members. So there's just too many to mention. I've got a list as long as my arm of things. Particularly, I'm looking at laggards at the moment, companies that are reporting positively but who haven't seen a significant, I mean, I can mention, I always mention this one, but Spectra Systems, SPSY, looks a great quality business. We've talked about it loads of times, and it just hasn't budged. It hasn't participated in this rally at all for no particular reason, no company specific news. So I'm looking for things where you've obviously still got selling overhangs despite the fact that the business is trading well. So I think that's a good place to look.
Didn't I read somewhere that they've just appointed a new finance director, non-board?
That's right. Yeah, non-board finance director. One of the readers on my Substack today pointed out, apparently this was the fourth finance director in 4 years or something.
Crikey.
Yeah, it looks like if you don't get on with the founder CEO, you're gone, you know, which I think is a little bit of a concern, isn't it? Because I think most of us like a dynamic between CEO and CFO where it's sort of first amongst equals rather than a totally dominant founder CEO. But any views on that yourself, Paul?
If a company typically gets through their finance directors, it would be something I would look at negatively, because you've either appointed them or recruited badly if you get through four, and then or alternatively there is that sort of that dynamic of it, you know, have we really got independence? So that'd be something I'd actually have a chat to. Is it Nabil, if I remember rightly?
He's a huge, larger than life character. I've never actually met him because he's based in America, but on webinars, you know, I mean, he has been described to me by quite a few smart investors as being an absolute genius in him and his team. You know, they've got a team of about 10 or 15 utterly brilliant scientists who just come up with all these innovations and commercialize them all. It's an incredible company, and it's dirt cheap, and it pays dividends. I mean, I don't understand why. Maybe the seller knows something we don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, and it just might well be that he's got really high standards and people haven't met it. So, you know, simple as that. Okay, we've got a question from Harish Hirani. He's asking about React PLC, the cleaning business that had a bit of a fall this week. I think they were talking about some of their premium contracts or larger contracts. Their decision, the customer decision cycles had been sort of elongated, and therefore they had a bit of a hole, a bit of a profit warning. I don't know how you view this one now.
Yeah, well, one of my team, Dave, he looked at this one. What was that, Tuesday this week, wasn't it? Profit warning. It dropped 19% on the day. It was a bit worse than that early on, 24% down. So some people did buy the dip, react. We think it's, I mean, fundamentally a pretty sound business. Subscale at the moment, though, and it's got this chicken and egg thing where it can't really raise equity because the equity is so lowly valued. But its whole business model is based on doing bolt-on acquisitions for specialist cleaning businesses, which sounds boring, but they're quite high margin, some of these businesses, and it's repeating rather than recurring revenues in many cases. But it sounds like 85% is repeating, but it sounds like customers are retrenching. And React did mention the NI and minimum wage hikes, not just in terms of how it affects them, but how their customers are reacting to this and maybe rescheduling cleaning jobs, pushing back on price increases. So it was a bit wobbly, and the brokers cut the forecast by about 20%. So to my mind, that means a 20% drop in share price is probably about right to reflect the fact that things are a bit tougher than they expected. The balance sheet's quite weak, but the net debt position is only 0.7 times EBITDA, which is better than I expected. Although I would flag up that you also probably need to add on contingent consideration. I would normally treat that as debt, you know, which would debt a bit higher, but not alarming. So we still think it's not bad. We think it's okay. We're amber, so we're neutral on React. But have you looked at it, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it's very cheap. It's about 6.5 times PE of adjusted earnings going forward. But what's sort of like, I wouldn't have thought there'd be that high an IPR, sort of like, you know, barriers to entry for this type of business. Yeah. But to be honest, they actually do make 12.5% EBIT margins, which says to me, actually, they've got reasonable economies of scale. So I'd be interested to have a chat. I think is it Sean Doak who's the CEO?
You know. I'm not sure, but they've done a few webinars on various platforms, and they come across well. Management, you know, they sound like they're disciplined in terms of their acquisition pricing and strategy, which is key, isn't it? In these buy and build things, you've got to have all the guys who've made a success at buy and build say, we have these strict rules, we just don't overpay for things. And it can often be small businesses, especially cleaning businesses, where the owner just wants to retire and wants it to go to a small, you know, doesn't want it turned into a corporate vehicle. So they're passionate about who they sell to. So I quite like the concept between React, but it's had a bit of a bump in the road, not a disaster though. So Harish, I think I don't think it's a bad company at all. I think it should be okay, I would imagine.
Okay, let's go a bit further up the food chain. We've got Bodycote, which is basically an industrials businesses that I think basically does coatings and helps harden metals for specialist applications like aerospace and defense and industrials, etc. Came out with a bit of a profit warning about 6 months ago, and then I think it was an update just recently, and they sort of reassured that they were going to hit their numbers. But with the second half waiting, shares have responded pretty well. I don't know how you view this one at all. It's sort of like, it seems to be, you know, an interesting mid-cap trading at roughly around about, 9.5 times PE.
We like it. I think we've mentioned this one before. I don't really understand what it does because I'm just a numbers man, really. So, just under $1 billion market cap. We had news on Tuesday this week, trading update, which, as you say, the full year outlook was in line. No direct tariff exposure, it says as well. We like the balance sheet. It's got a nice, sturdy balance sheet. Net debt's only 0.5 times, so that's pretty modest. It talked about some supply chains improving, but some markets remaining weak. So a little bit mixed on this trading update, but the bottom line is they're trading in line with expectations. We're finding this with a lot of companies now. The broker forecasts seem to be set at quite realistically modest levels. And that's what I look for. I like for achievable broker forecasts, so we don't get yet another profit warning from some of these things. And it's a Bodycote stands out as really good value, we think. So we like that one. Thumbs up from me and my team. I think you were positive on it, Paul, as well.
It's one of those things, isn't it, Ru? When I look at sort of sectors, my preferred sort of choices are technology and healthcare. But when I actually look for what most over the 30 year where I've made most money, technology, yes, and particularly in sort of software, that's been the number one where I've made most of my sort of profits. But actually second is industrials. I've made more money in industrials than I have in healthcare over 30 years. And healthcare has been pretty generous to me as well. So, you know, but I don't spend as much time looking at industrials. And I think if you've got something really quite niche and has got sort of like, you know, good IPR with recurring revenue streams like aftermarket, then I think you can, the UK's got some good companies actually.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what the operating margin is on Bodycote? Because I always, that's my kind of key criteria I look for.
Yeah, it's, I've got it for forward over 16% EBIT margin.
Well, that's very good. I mean, that in one number tells me that it's a quality business then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Another one, which is industrial, came out with an update, or basically I think it's just sold its talc division, is Elementis, which is quite popular with one of the stable, or one of the fund managers in the Harwood stable. I think he's Stuart Whittlesome. And yes. It basically, they've got the number one sort of like access, they own the sort of hectorite mine out in America, etc. And they supply sort of like quite sort of chemicals and stuff into cosmetics and deodorants and stuff like that. I don't know how you want, how do you see this one, Elementis? It's going through a bit of a turnaround.
It is, yeah. I didn't do a report on it this week. Is this the, yeah, they sold the talcum powder thing, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
For what seemed like quite a good price. I'm doing this from memory now because I can't find my notes, but I think it was around $120 million. But then they said their net proceeds would be $55 million.
Yes.
So the $120 million was the EV. So it must be taking quite a big chunk of debt away from the group, which is a positive thing. Is that the right way around, or is it cash? No, it would be taking debt with it, wouldn't it?
It is, yeah. They must have given some debt, or effectively it had a negative working capital. It was basically like closing accounts, I think.
Yeah, I always get myself tied in knots on these sorts of calculations. But yeah, no, it sounds very good. And they're going to use nearly all of the net proceeds, $50 million for a buyback. Mm-hmm. So the market liked it. I think the shares were up about 10% yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, I remember when I was in Gozo listening to Christopher Mills explaining the upside on this as well. Similar sort of basis. A lot of their things seem to be, some of the parts and disposals can create value, can't it? They like to be a catalyst for that. So, I think it looks interesting.
Yeah, I think what's definitely worth sort of like people having to considering is that it's got a number of divisions, and selling off sort of like non-core assets means the rest of the business, one, makes better margins and grows faster. But more importantly, if somebody wants to put a number on the business, it's a single shot. You can pick it up. You can pick it up. So that's where the Harwood guys are very good at. They do the sum of the parts basis, and they can help directors to basically realize that hidden value that in the private market. So I think I don't know what the world's biggest hectorite mine is worth in California, because they own it, Elementis. But I can imagine it's probably a big number.
I've got to ask, what on earth is hectorite?
It basically goes in. It's an ingredient that goes into lots of sort of coatings, and it goes into detergents and deodorants and cosmetics and stuff like that. So it's a bit sort of forward integrated, but they've got they supply just about all around the world.
Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? So they can price gouge everyone who uses it. If they chose
possibly. To. Possibly. Okay, we've got a couple of questions related. We've got SES81. He's asking about any thoughts on the recent surge in European defence stocks. Has it run its course, and is it time to sell the sizzle? And then we've also got Rebecca, who's asking about Avon Technologies, which is big into defence, particularly into sort of rebreathers and gas masks, and also helmets for the US military and stuff like that. So let's take defense as a total. Any thoughts on defense as a sector? Because it has run very hard, and the EU did this week say that it was going to try, and it was targeting 5% of GDP on defense spend across each country, compared to 2%. you know, mandated currently, which is a massive, massive increase.
Oh, yeah, massive. And it won't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll say that's the aim, but it absolutely yeah. won't happen. Well, the only ones I really know about are Avon, which we're moderately positive on, Amber Green. We've been several times this year. Yeah, that's trotting out nice, reassuring update. We're not really sure how to value it, though. We think maybe it's a bit toppy, but people are obviously betting on it, you know, continuing to outperform. The other one I've looked at is Kinetic, QQ dot. I like that one. I think that is that had quite a positive outlook, I think, with the recent figures that came out. And Cohort, we've been all over for several years, actually, but that looks fully up with events. So the only thing I would say is it's a very obvious trade, isn't it, buying defence shares at the moment. And maybe it's a little bit stale as a theme. But that's all I've got, really, Paul. So over to you.
Yeah, no, I was just looking at the PE ratio for Avon Technologies, and clearly the E hasn't yet been updated by analysts for the extra spend in Europe and the States on defence. But if looking at the past numbers, i.e. the ones before the announcement, it's on a PE ratio of, it says here on Stockopedia, 80 times for this year, and then 106 times for the following for 2026, which just says to me is that it has definitely moved hard. And I guess if you look at that sort of over the last month, from £13.50 to nearly 18 quid, I mean, that's probably it's a bit of a rocket ship. Is it just the announcement?
I'm not convinced those numbers are right.
Nor am I.
The problem sometimes with broker consensus is that if some brokers leave defunct forecasts in the numbers, they're kind of dilute. You know what I mean? They dilute the rate. On ShareScope, I've got 81.8 cents. That's US cents. So what's that? About 60p for the current year, which is March 25. Yeah. What are the shares?
No, I've got, you're right, you're exactly right, Paul. I made a mistake. I was reading the wrong number out. Forward PE is 30 going down to 23 in 26.
Yeah, that's the number I've got. Yeah. Which, you know, we know is a lot, but if people feel that the company is growing into the valuation, and if people are expecting an outperformance and profit, people again often forget profit is the operationally geared difference between two large numbers at the top, isn't it? Revenue and cost of sales. So profit can double, you know, eat or more. So hence why it's sometimes paying up for a high PE can be worth it, can't it? But you've got to really have done your research properly, which I haven't really done with Avon because I haven't got time. You know, I'm covering over 600 companies, so we're just doing very brief reviews. But it certainly looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah, no good. Okay, let's switch sectors. We've got Ben Sharman. He's asking about M&C Saatchi, the advertising stroke marketing business. It's got quite an interest. It's got a great reputation for helping large corporates with their advertising campaigns. But what I think also about a third of the business is to do with issues, or the issues division, which I believe is humanitarian aid agencies. It helps get the message out across the world for disaster relief, but also for sort of vaccination programs and education and stuff, which is quite unique. Anyway, regardless of that, what do you think of M&C Saatchi?
I like it, actually, and I should disclose I bought some recently, so I've got a small long position in this. The reason I bought was just it seemed to be on a very attractive valuation. Have you got the PE on that one, Paul?
Yeah, I've got it about 8.5, actually.
Yeah, that's it. I don't understand. There was some sort of put and call option shenanigans on the balance sheet a few years ago, but that seems to have largely run its course now. I think they could either buy out the options and or let them lapse. And it's now quite small, relatively small beer. The last balance sheet I've looked at was December. Net tangible asset value was modestly positive and it had modest net cash. Again, I don't really know entirely what their specialisms are. So it's interesting what you just said.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But I was very impressed with how well it traded throughout the whole pandemic. You would have thought, wouldn't you, marketing PR would just be slashed by the clients. But Saatchi's actually did pretty well throughout, which tells me they've got some sort of point of difference. And Viv Maria obviously tried to take it over. She's got a big personal stake as well as her her company, ADVT, I think it is, isn't it? Advanced ADVT.
Yes, that's right,
they,
yeah.
They hold roughly 20% of it. I think it's very interesting. And again, seems cheap for what it is. I could imagine this being a third higher than it is at the moment, given a bit of patience. So, yeah. Does it pay dividends, Paul? I can't remember.
It does, but only a small one. I've got a yield of about 1.1%.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you looked at it at all?
Yeah, I think it looks very cheap. It didn't typically, I don't usually go for marketing and advertising.
I don't know.
They're not my type of business, but given the valuation and, you know, this used to be a very sexy area, sort of like, you know, in the TMT sort of like, you know, times, etc. But you've got to look at, I think it all comes down to how you see marketing and advertising in the new digital AI world panning out, and how much do companies need of sort of like advisors and third parties to do their campaign, you know, campaigns. And if you're positive on that they're still going to need it for that human element, human touch, then they should be well placed because the brand's very good.
Yeah, and also looking at your chart there, it hasn't actually, it hasn't bounced very much from the bottom. So I think I'm slightly in profit on this trade. I think I bought around 160, precisely for that reason, that the market was roaring back up again, and this one wasn't, and it's financed okay, and it's cheap on. And what are the updates like this year? I've reported on it three times this year. In line with expectations. That was on the 15th of May, so we've got quite a recent £3 million cost savings on track, it said, and like-for-like revenue broadly in line with last year, so slightly below. The only thing you've got to, obviously, with PR companies, you've got to filter the RNS even more heavily than with any other company, haven't you? Because trying to persuade us that black is white and up is down is what they do for their living. So you can't believe a word they say in their own outlook statements. But
No, I know. Okay, let's move to online travel. We've got On the Beach, which is really sort of like, seems to be taking market share. It's more of a sort of like a retailer of package holidays and flights and stuff, an aggregator rather than actually having the hotels itself or taking on its balance sheet like TUI would do. They seem to be doing really well. And how do you view this one? I was suspecting we were going to be peak travel and peak holiday, but doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, we like it. But and we were all over this when the founder bought about £2 million of the stock a few years ago at around 90 or 95p, I think it was. Well, you can't get a clearer bull signal than that, can you? And sure enough, that began, you know, a very significant rise. The news from it has been good. We softened from amber. We were amber green back in February. We've softened to amber just because when my colleague Dave looked at it on the 13th of May, that was H1 results. We just felt, well, it was in line, but profit was up 23%, which is very good for the H1 figures. Confident statement about the outlook. But we kind of felt it was up with events, the price, because travel businesses don't command big PEs anymore. And we just feel they're a great quality, Jet2 and EasyJet. Yeah. I know they're different business models, really, but within the sector, that are on a PE of half of what On the Beach is on. So, we kind of feel it's up with events, but it's been a very good performer in the last year. Yeah, we can see from your chart. We're kind of profit-taking type view of it now. But I think they've got a medium-term aspiration, haven't they, to hit much higher forecasts. So what's your view, Paul? You don't really like travel companies, do you?
No, online sort of travel. I'd always sort of question what the real USPs are for this above sort of, again, generative AI or the other big aggregators in sort of leisure, the Expedias and lastminute.com and all this. But having said that, you know, I was just looking at the margins, and 23% EBIT margins for On the Beach seems fantastic.
That is fantastic. You're right. I didn't realize it was quite that high. The other thing is, I think they spend a colossal amount on marketing. And it struck me that if they can actually innovate and make the marketing more effective, instead of just repeating ad nauseum those TV ads of those fat children waddling around eating croissant, you know, I mean, surely they can find a more imaginative way of advertising, you know. And if so, that operating margin could really shoot up, couldn't it?
Yeah, no, true. Okay, right. Abel Serini is asking about pets at home, basically. Did he come out with a statement today saying they were all in line and things were moving ahead? But I think they came up with some statement today saying that the sales had were positive, but the costs were increasing, but the actual veterinary side was doing well. The shares actually responded pretty well, up 3% today.
Yeah, I hold this personally, just for full disclosure. Mm. I was looking at this morning. I did half write a full section up, but I ran out of time, so I've just done a brief. Mm. I haven't got the right page in front of me. I'll just waffle for a second. And just, will you tell me what you think, Paul, while I find my notes?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, I think some of the overhang from the CMA review for the vet side has helped the shares move up. But also, I think some of the sort of the worries about the UK consumer and competition, particularly from China, seems slightly unfounded. And therefore, you've had a nice bounce of, you know, in the shares, but only really back to the back end of last year, where they had the sort of like obviously the profit warning or some sort of like event at the back end. So it looks as though it's probably moving towards where it should be. It's probably got a bit of, I mean, looking at that, it looks as though it's got a bit more upside to go to me.
Yeah, I like it. I found my notes on it now from this morning. Yes, you're quite right. It was an update this morning, wasn't it? Basically, well, it was in line. So bang in line, the results. And that was for the financial year March 2025. In line, adjusted PBT was basically flat, slightly up at 133 million. Now, this is the interesting bit. I've mentioned this to you before as well. It's a high margin vets business buried in a retail share. And this is where I think there's an angle on this share. Yeah. I think it should be on a PE of 14 or 15. It's actually on a PE of about 12 because people haven't realized that the vets business is so important. It's only about 10% of revenue, but it's actually now over half the total profit. It's 51%. Mm. Of the total profit, and it's growing like a train. The PBT growth within the vets division grew 23% for March 25 year end, but obviously that's offsetting declines in the retail side of things. So I think it's that's the angle on this one. Also, it's got no debt. The only debt is balance sheet is leases debt, which I ignore. So you've got a debt-free, highly cash generative business that pays a 5% dividend yield as well. Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really cheap. Now, the slight cloud, I did wonder if the market may recoil at this, but it hasn't done, is that it said the first 6 weeks of trading, so what will that be up to mid-May, was in line, so that's fine. But the guidance it's given is for a decline of between 6% and 14% in PBT for the new financial year. So,
yes.
You know, I was actually quite surprised the shares didn't sell off on that, but they didn't. So
I guess that's because of the extra costs, isn't it? It's where you've got the NI and the minimum wages and, I don't know, other marketing costs or whatever it is they've got in there or new initiatives, et cetera, that's taken that margin down. But
And big news that we haven't covered before, Pets at Home, it's now become a platform. I'm a platform now. So it's not just a shop selling rabbits. It's now a platform for all your pet needs. So they're going to expand into animal insurance, which I think is a lucrative area. Another interesting angle, Paul, with the CMA inquiry, which we probably all think now is pretty benign, with that, it scared off CVS Group, who are now have given up buying vets in the UK and are now expanding in Australia. Well, that could present a nice opportunity for Pets at Home, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I don't think until the CMA announces what's actually happening, I don't think anybody's going to be buying vets, but we will all be going forward.
Set them up as joint ventures, I think, don't they? Pets at Home, I believe. So they're semi-private, you know, they're not quite, I think, anyway, but I think it's the wrong price, basically. I think this is worth...
No, it does, yeah. No, I would agree, yeah. I think they're both
£3.50, I think, would be a fair price for it. I like that one.
Good. Okay, well, we had a trading update from Frontier Developments, gaming company. What's the market cap on it? Roughly around about 100 million market cap. Lots of cash, actually. And they basically do their own sort of like, you know, games, etc. I think one of them's to do with Jurassic Park or something like that, one of the dinosaurs and stuff. The shares responded very well today, up 8%. They still trade at less, 0.7 of, given where the cash is, 0.7 of sales. So, and they're just about reaching sort of like profitability or getting back to profitability. I didn't really have a look at this one today. So it still looks cheap, actually.
Yeah, my colleague Dave knows more about computer games than I do, and he covers this one for us. And I read his section on it. I have to say, I was really tempted to pick up a few of these personally.
Yes.
Because, as you say, it's got a nice solid balance sheet with plenty of cash. It's got its owner managed, I believe. Mm. The founder still owns a big chart. And have you seen the long-term chart on Frontier Developments? It's unbelievable. It's lost. It's staggering, isn't it?
Thirty quid during the lockdowns.
Over 90% down. So there's a lot. So basically, just on, and I think the share count has not changed as well. Mm. So in theory, if it hits one or two blockbuster games, there could be very good upside on this. So I think, I know nothing about the sector whatsoever. Yeah. But purely as a risk reward punt, I'm tempted by this one. But the only trouble is, if you look at that zigzag section of the recent chart, it's done about five or six big rebounds. Mm. There we are, in the last year, and it immediately sells off after all of them. So you look at the current price today and you think, oh, well, you know, it's not going to keep going up, is it? People are just going to use that to sell into again. So I don't know. It's any views from your end, Paul?
Yeah, I think they play in the sort of the bigger, rather than indie games, which are about £1 million a shot. I think they play in the big boys league with these larger franchises and therefore which are much more competitive. Yeah. And if you're competing against the likes of EA and Sony and people like that, then you think, well, okay, well, they've got hundreds of millions of pounds budgets. It's quite a difficult. You've got to have a really strong franchise and then mine it as going forward in terms of the recurring revenue stream. So it is a bit like, I don't know, sort of like getting a winner in sort of the Eurovision Song Contest or having a sort of like a major hit in sort of whatever it is, whatever industry. But how much recurring revenue streams? But it does look very interesting and very cheap, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think just as a risk reward punt, if that drops back down again, if this is another spike, I'd be very tempted if I had any cash burning a hole in my pocket. I nearly bought a few today, actually, but I just, when I looked at that chart, I thought, if that chart tells you there's still stale bulls in there who are selling, doesn't it?
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, again, and the one changing sectors, we're going to go to sort of like house building, construction and land development. We go to Henry Boot, which basically does sort of homes out in the Northeast and the Midlands, etc. So it's got these three divisions. It trades incredibly at round about, the share price is currently 220 and the net tangible assets seem to be about 310p. So it's significantly below net tangible assets. I don't know whether you've had a look at this one as a sort of like a recovery or value play.
I don't think there's been any recent news from Henry Boot, has there?
I don't think there has. No. It just looks very cheap.
Yeah, we last looked at it. I shouldn't have drunk that Diet Coke so quickly. Sorry. we last looked at it 2 months ago. And we flagged up that the shares then were trading at a discount of a third to the net tangible asset value, that was when they were £2.08. Do you know what they are now, Paul?
Yeah, 220.
Oh, so they have rebounded a bit. I think, isn't this the one that does, it's sort of land redevelopment?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, I think they sell the land, they get planning permission and then sell it on, I think, don't they? Mm. So are they doing some house building themselves now as well?
Or? Yeah, they bought a premium house builder as well, as they're more affordable, which is where they really made their name in the Northeast. And I guess it comes down to really it's your view on sort of like that whole industry of building and construction and land development. But if you're bullish on that area, I think you're probably this is probably the biggest discount to net tangible assets, actually, because I think most of the house builds itself are about round about net tangible assets or slightly below.
I do like that this sector at the moment. I think the fears are overblown. Although I suppose interest rate expectations have deteriorated, haven't they, in the last few weeks? And there's also some government threat, wasn't there, to take away undeveloped lands from developers and or force them to do something with it?
Yes, there was actually. Good point.
So, no, but on the face of it, certainly on the discount to NAV, Henry Boot looks very interesting. I think it's been listed a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I think Simon Thompson's quite liked it, actually, for some time as well.
Yeah, we've just calling up my spreadsheets, being a bit slow. Yeah, we're amber green on it, which is our code for moderately positive.
Okay, good. Let's move to software. We've only talked about it once before. Get Busy basically does document and task management, sort of like for, I think it's for the accountancy firm, 92% recurring revenue streams. Seems cheap, but I don't know if you've ever had a look at this one at all, Paul.
Yeah, we've looked at everything, Paul. So, it's got this profitable division. It's some online vault or something. It's called.
That's right, Smart Vault.
Smart Vault, yeah, which a lot of the accountancy firms use and seem happy with. So that's good, but it's X growth, and then they're using the cash flow from that to do two or three. I think two sort of startup type, well, you know, early stage, should we say, in terms of commercial penetration. So it's really a bet on whether you think the growth areas can succeed or not. I'm a little bit skeptical on this one. The story feels a bit stale to me. You know, they've been telling the same story for a long time. Doesn't really make any proper profit, no dividends, and a weak balance sheet. So no, it doesn't float my boat, Paul, but I'm not trying to make a judgment on what will happen in future. That's what the readers to do. So you know this one as well, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the sort of thesis needs to be how much unique IPR does it bring to the table, and can it get impacted by generative AI? But I did notice they've actually just inked sort of like the integration with Intuit, you know, the big sort of accountancy software company, which seems to be going well with their, you know, basically their customers. And if they can sort of, hang on the coattails of Intuit, I mean, that's got a huge installed base. So you might find they do quite reasonably. But I mean, it's all to do with sort of like improving productivity, improving efficiency with sort of document management and file management and that sort of stuff. So it's in. I don't know enough about it, but it does look interesting. It's only trading at about 1x EV sales, so it's certainly not expensive.
Yeah, is it Inuit or Intuit? I can't remember, but I know the thing you mean.
Yeah, Intuit it is, the big American Intuit boys. Yeah, they do TurboTax, I think it's called. Is their
name? Okay. Is that are they linking up with Get Busy, one of Get Busy's new ventures, or is it their old Smart Vault thing? Do you know?
I think it's Smart Vault. I think Smart Vault is getting the. I mean, it may just be they're putting APIs together and they're just connecting it so they can do it electronically, which may not be huge. But if you do get sort of like the power of Intuit behind it, or you've got in a much better position to sell Smart Vault to the Intuit installed base, then you know, you might have sort of upselling opportunities there.
So that could breathe some fresh life into the sort of legacy business, maybe. I don't know.
Good. Okay, another large cap or mid cap that is trading really cheap is ZigUp, which is the old
Ready Northgate. It was too
busy. Ready Northgate, that's it. Yeah, basically does the white, it hires out white vans to tradesmen and also does the insurance and the servicing and stuff like that. And I was looking, and they came out with quite a good update. They're saying they saw rental growth of about 6% like for like. The shares currently trade at less than 7x PE, and they seem for a rental company a pretty decent balance sheet. I don't know if you've had a look at this one at all, Paul.
No, we like this one. It's I just think it's irrationally cheap. As you say, the balance sheet is actually very strong. Now, my co-writer, John, he did a section on this and he focused in on the debt and said, oh, it's got far too much debt. It's a high multiple EBITDA and things like that. I said, no, you're looking at it wrong. The debt is to finance the fleet of vehicles which they own. So, you know, you need to almost think of it as being like a mortgage on a house. Mm. And it's actually, and the vehicles are worth, I think, about double what the debt is. So yeah. the debt isn't a problem at all. And it's got net tangible asset values of a value of 822 million, which is pretty similar to the market cap. But it's interesting how different investors do see debt in different ways. I'm not saying my way. Well, I more or less did say my way is correct. But but no, I mean, other people just look at things differently, don't they? And John's a very experienced and successful investor. So, yeah, but I mean, on a PE basis and a dividend basis, ZigUp looks fantastic. Yeah. I cannot understand why it remains so cheap. So maybe I'm wrong. I mean, yeah, I've got a forward PE of 6.5 and a dividend yield of 7.5.
Yeah, higher dividend yield than PE ratio. Incredible.
You never normally see that at companies which also have bulletproof balance sheets. Mm-hmm. You know, it's normally that happens when there's something really badly wrong. You know, it's in terminal decline. So I don't understand why it's priced the way it is. It just seems dirt cheap to me.
Yeah, I think probably people, they'd expect, or the share price is suggesting that the UK economy is going to fall off a cliff, but I don't see it. I think with the extra stimulus that's been put in, then I think we're going to be okay, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and also the van rental hire business does a fair bit of business in Spain as well. Yeah. But and then the insurance side of it, they provide courtesy cars for the insurance companies. That seems very stable. They don't seem to. There is a risk that they might lose, you know, it's competitive. They might lose a big contract, which did happen once before and knock the shares. But it was a great buying opportunity because they won another contract back. And, you know, so, yeah, I think it's not really nice value share for people who just want a decent. I mean, 7.5% yield. It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, no, I would agree. Yeah. Another one which has come.
Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, and another share that's come off a lot, Tom Hildreth has pointed it out, is Gamma Communications. It basically does, I think it's sort of call center sort of like services and software, I think, and has got some data centers as well, largely around Europe. I've got a sneak suspicion it's moving up to the main market, but the shares are trading at, I was just looking at the sort of Stockopedia, they're trading at roughly around about 13 times PE. And 12 times for next year, which for a considered a high quality business does seem pretty cheap. I don't know if you've had a look at this one of late.
Yeah, we've covered it three times this year, moderately positive on each three of the three occasions. Mm. I think it was one of the team who pointed out that was this the one that received a takeover approach from Italy last year?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it did, yeah.
It did, didn't it? I can't remember what happened with that. Yeah, I think it's slightly disappointed. It looks like on the 14th of May, I've got it here, it dropped 13% to £11.36 on a trading update that basically said UK trading was soft, but they're mitigating that with cost controls, cutting costs. And it was in line for the full year, but it still dropped sharply. So what are the shares now? Have they bounced?
They're £12.12.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they've bounced 5 or 6% then, haven't they? Mm. So, I mean, I don't really understand anything about the business, Paul. But it just the headline numbers, it looks good value to me.
Yeah,
you'll know about this one.
Yeah, I think you know, Tom, have a look at the recurring revenue streams and look at sort of the contracts and the go forward. And if you've got a sort of like a 3 to 5 year time horizon, I think it's probably a good bet. I would. The key question to ask, though, is will call centers be impacted by AI, generative AI? If they put in Argentic, you know, AI into these, and therefore you don't need as many people, many seats, whether that's working at home or whether it's working, you know, hybrid working, or whether it's actually in a call center, then what does that mean in terms of their sort of services? Will there be less demand? So I think you've got to get your head around that. As will people basically be happy speaking to a chatbot, you know, who speaks well, or do they want actually a human interface? I don't know.
And also, I note it spent all its cash pile. It did have a nice cash pile in December, but it spent a lot and some bank debt on a major acquisition. And I have questioned whether they possibly overpaid for the acquisition.
Right. Okay. Good point.
It's not an opinion. It's just I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
for people to home in on that, because prior you haven't got that balance sheet support so much now. But yeah, it does look interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got Steve Walters asking about an old favourite of yours, Alumask, which basically does sort of roofing and building products. It's been a real sort of like thoroughbred over the last sort of 12 months or so. What's your latest on this one? It seems to be trading at less than 12 times still, pays a 3% dividend yield. So pretty good value. Yeah.
I thought I'd written about this recently, but I can't find my notes on it. So, yeah, I still like it. I mean, the shares had done well, but with good reason. I think I'm pretty sure they've been putting out inline updates, and that it makes a very good operating margin for a building products company. So it seems to be in, of course, the shares have done really well, haven't they?
Yeah, doubled over the last 12 months.
Yeah, that's wow. I haven't spotted that. That's fantastic. No, we really like it. We think the re-rating is fully justified. It's a real quality little company. This is niche products. It's got, I think, four divisions, hasn't it, Alumask? Mm. I had a chat with management not that long ago. Very straightforward people, just, you know, this is what we do. This is our disciplines on margins and blah, blah, blah. Completely bucked the trend, hasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, no, it seems to be in the right place at the right time. I know roofing products and the sort of like water management stuff with the environment and the upgrading of buildings, then they really are in a very, you know, in the right place at the right time. And I think they do that huge sort of like flood stormwater relief sort of like funnels that are going into one of the big airports out in Hong Kong, if I remember rightly.
Oh, yeah, that was deferred, I think, wasn't it, that contract?
Oh, was it deferred, was it? Oh, okay.
I believe so, but I can't remember when. And I think they still hit their numbers even without it. I think that was the story. It was, very interesting niche products, isn't it? You know, a little British company, obscure British company, making drains for Hong Kong Airport. That's impressive. It's really good, isn't it?
Yeah. Good. Okay, we've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about, don't even know what they do, but you might know, is OPG Power. I presume that's something to do with renewables or hydrogen or something, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, that came up yesterday or the day before. We've decided to drop coverage on this because it's based in, I think it's based in India with a UK.
Right, okay.
And its cash is about 70% of the market cap. So it could be a bargain. And its update was in line. Mm. But we just generally, because of the performance of very small overseas companies listed on AIM, we generally have a blanket do not touch type of attitude towards them. If they've been around for 10 years or something, like MTI Wireless Edge, for example, that's an Israeli nano cap, but it's been around for so long and it's paid dividends for so long, we now trust it, you know? But the more speculative stuff that doesn't pay divvies and that's overseas companies that's still name, it's just safest to steer clear of them, I think. I'm not besmirching this individual company in any way. I'm just saying as a generic thing. Oh, and it's over 50% owned by a family, I believe, which is another negative as far as I'm concerned. So, you don't know. You said you don't know this one.
Don't know it, but I reiterate what you said. You know, treat companies, particularly in India and China, with a sort of like, you know, a fair deal of skepticism, because it's actually quite difficult getting any capital out of it. If they do make money have surplus capital, actually bringing it back to pay dividends for shareholders is really tough, because you get a really heavy withholding tax. And the only way around it is to effectively get loans in the UK, which are then securitized against the business out in India. And therefore, using the loans, then you can pay dividends. So you have to manufacture it. But that still gives you a debt in the UK for the PLC, offset by cash in India that is trapped, you can't get out. So other than just investing, it's or selling eventually. But even if they do sell, you'll still get withholding tax on that business that the PLC will have to pay.
Yeah, that's a really interesting angle on it. I hadn't thought about that. There was another company today, that similar sort of thing. Here we are, Integrated Diagnostic, IDHD.
Yes, Egypt.
Great. Yeah, it's showing growth. But of course, it's operating in a hyperinflationary economy where the growth is. And again, you've got a similar problem. I think that's Egypt, isn't it?
It is. It's the Egyptian pound, yeah.
And they can't get the foreign currency out. Same sort of thing as you. Well, I don't know if that's still the case, but that was the case last time. Yeah. So for that reason, even though it's saying ahead of expectations, if it's locked up in a country with a currency that's in crisis, and there's quite a few African countries at the moment hyperinflationary, isn't there? They just can't get the dollars that they need for imports. We just think again. We need to keep this simple and just stop covering companies like the OPG thing and IDHC. We're just dropping coverage for them.
Yeah, well, there was a classic example of that, wasn't there, about, I don't know, a year ago with PZ Cousins, the soaps manufacturer and the personal products, etc. It had a big problem with, it had trapped cash in Nigeria, and then they had the devaluation of the Niger, and they couldn't get the money out, and therefore it went to zero, about 100 million. In one day, it was worth 100 million sterling in cash, and then the next day, it went down to about one, and it was zero.
It was crazy, wasn't it? Now, this one, actually, I've been meaning to have a fresh look at this because I had a call from, I hope he doesn't mind me, so I'm sure he won't mind me saying, I had a call from Lord Lee, who used to be on the board of directors of PZ Cousins many moons ago, I think.
Yes.
And he said there could be a special situation here of interest because he reckons the Nigerian operations could be sold locally for probably quite a lot more than people think based in the UK. So he said, there's actually, we should get the Harwood boys on this because they'd like it, because it's again a sum of the parts special situation type thing that Lord Lee was very bullish on, and that was quite recently. He briefed me on it, but I haven't followed it up. So yeah, it could be an angle on that one, so we probably shouldn't dismiss it out of hand.
No, I would agree. No, all the bad news has already happened. Yeah. I mean, it's trading at roughly around about 11.5 times PE, and the dividend yield is what, 4%. So it's looking very cheap, no doubt about it. Would somebody buy it to break it up? Might well do, actually, because they're just basically, you get Nigeria for free. If the main business in Europe, and I think it's Australia as well, it's still got good brands. I think it's Carex, isn't it? It was one of them, their brand.
There's a few, I think they might own Saint-Tropez as well, the fake tan thing.
Yeah.
So they should sell it to Donald Trump. But, Lord Lee reckons they've got some really valuable brands in this, and that we shouldn't just dismiss it out of hand. So, interesting to read a feedback on that, actually. If anyone has the time to do a proper research job on it, let us know what you think.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's switch sectors. We've got retail, which is a company which has done really well of late. I'd written it off. Quite a big market cap. We've got Currys, the electrical retailer. The shares have just been sparking up, you know, for the last sort of like 6 months or something. What's your sort of your latest on this one? It sort of trades up. It's gone up a lot, but I still get a PE of 11.5 with a, it hasn't got much of a dividend yield. It's only about 1.5%. But any more juice in the tank left on this one?
I was slow on the uptake on this one, so apologies for that. I was sceptical last year, but it kept rising. And then the penny dropped with me finally that actually this thing's quite good in April this year. So I moved it up from amber to amber green. Because, you know, you can't keep fighting against a company that just keeps putting out positive trading updates.
Yeah.
It has a tendency to put out trading updates. And instead of saying trading update, you know, it says strong momentum continuing or something as the actual title of the RNS, which is a bit throws me off. It doesn't come up on my searches properly, but anyway, it just keeps puts out sort of incrementally better guidance, so you know you have lots of positive updates from it, but it's not by much. They're just inching up the guidance by 5 or 10 million, but there's no doubt about it, they're trading well, and I think it seems to be well managed. An interesting angle on Currys is that it's so big that they get kind of first dibs with the manufacturers and distributors. They said that. I remember a webinar with the management during the pandemic. They said, look, you know, we're not at the back of the queue for scarce supplies. We're at the front because we're the biggest. So I think it's a better quality business than I realized, to be fair. And the latest update was on 21st of May. So that's very recently, isn't it? And it was a slightly ahead update for the April year end. Profit up 37% year on year. I mean, that's impressive, isn't it? Oh, and it's going to resume divvies as well. So they disposed of their Greek subsidiary for a decent profit, didn't they, a while ago? So I think that's fixed the balance sheet. So no, we're sorry we were late to the party on this, but yeah, it's we think it's quite good. Balance sheet's not the best. Yeah. Negative net tangible asset value, but basically the business is funded by the suppliers. But we think it's still actually quite reasonable value. It's one of those things that's growing into, you know, growing into the price. And but I don't think I'd invest in it personally.
No, I wouldn't either. It only makes 2.5% EBIT margins.
Exactly. Just, you know, super low margins. Yeah.
It's like the contractors. I mean, they've done really well, the shares, you know, the civil contractors, but I wouldn't really touch, just because if things go wrong, they go wrong badly. Okay, we've got just a couple of final questions. We've got Richard Leppington. He's asking about Drax, basically, who own that big power station up in the northeast, which is a biofuels. It sort of like burns off pellets and stuff. We talked about it briefly, and the sort of the potential upside at that time was that the longevity of the power plant might be greater than most people think, simply because it's energy resilience in the country. It'll take a brave person like, you know, Ed Miliband to actually shut the thing. But the shares still trade at 6x PE, dividend yield of 4.5%. Don't know if you had any update on this one, any look, any views at all?
Not really, Paul. No, I haven't looked at that this year. But as you say, the attraction is obviously super low PE, decent dividend yield, and a strong balance sheet. But the issues you mentioned are going to be the crux of the investing case, aren't they? Either a bargain or sort of terminally ill. I don't have an opinion on this one.
Yeah, shares have done very well over the last 5 years. They've gone from £2 to £6.50 or £6.40. So, yeah, no, they've done well, pretty much good.
Bit too specialised for me, that one.
Okay, we've got Shay Seven Winds. He's asking about Funding Circle. I don't know if you had a look at this. Well, this is basically they do effectively specialist loans for businesses, usually act as the intermediary between an institution wanting to give loans and the actual business provider. I mean, they do have a small number on their balance sheet. Went through a bit of a turnaround. I haven't really looked at this at all of late. I don't know if you had you've sort of crossed your pencil over it at all?
Not this year, I don't think. I thought the bull case for this last year was very, very good. Mm. Very, very interesting. And I did a bit of research on it and I really liked it. And I bought some, I think I caught the tail end of the bull run on it. Yeah. But then it dropped sharply on the 4th of February, didn't it? Where a legal issue emerged. Saying that the documentation and processes may have been effective. That was the Times that broke the story. That was it.
Yes.
And they really crashed. But I think they've come. I don't. Has there been an update on that? I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. No, you raise a really good point. I was just trying to remember what the sort of the black spot was to sort of like, you know, to follow up on. But you
Yeah. Yeah, and they've done some buybacks with surplus cash. I think so. For the key point for me would be that the legal case would need to be resolved, I think, before I'd want to spend much time on looking at it fresh.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, Casper Mann, he's asking about Science Group, and he says they're still making a lot of noise about the management of Ricardo. Do you think this is justified? And is it either Science Group or Ricardo? Are there any of them buys at all or interesting stocks?
Well, all I would say is I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of Science Group. They're like a dog with a bone if they take a dislike to you, which they clearly have done to Ricardo. And I think, to be fair, the comments that Science Group are making about Ricardo are perfectly fair. It has underperformed badly. Science Group announced today or yesterday, I think it's now up to, it owns 22% of Ricardo, which is a big bet relative to its market cap. So I think that has encouraged some traders to buy Ricardo shares on the back of it by saying, well, they obviously see value. They operate in the same consultancy sector and they think shareholder value can be unlocked within Ricardo. So Science Group is trying to oust the chairman, and it announced today or yesterday, I think it was, saying they want shareholders to, so they requisitioned a meeting and they want shareholders to treat this as a vote of confidence or no confidence in Ricardo's management. So we'll have to just wait and see what happens. Fascinating situation though. But I'm just watching from the sidelines. However, I would say Science Group shares, I'm very positive on. I'm green on those. I think it's got a fabulous track record over about the last 10 years or something. And it's on a PE of 12.8. It's got a sound balance sheet, lots of freeholds on it. And it's been trading well, despite, tough macros. So Science Group looks to me like a real quality owner-managed business. I wanted to get the CEO on for an interview, but he battered me away. He said he likes to fly under the radar. Well, he could have fooled me reading his RNSs about Ricardo. That's not exactly flying under the radar, is it?
Yeah. Okay, we've got a couple of comments just about some of the companies. We've got Marky saying, for funding circle, Rockwood have recently sold a chunk, but sell if they're finished selling. So that's quite interesting, because that's Richard Staveley.
Yes.
And then you've got Rebecca. She adds that Gamma are entering the FTSE 250 in the June reshuffle, which may be impacting the actual shares as well. Mm. Could be a sort of like, you know, artificial sell-off. We've got one final question from Eli. He's asking about Seeing Machines, which I think these do these sort of driver assistance schemes that are now getting adopted by quite a few of the car OEMs around the world and truck OEMs to sort of like make sure that the drivers don't fall asleep and notify them and all this sort of stuff. Been a long time coming, this one. I don't know if you've ever had a look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I should add full disclosure, I do currently hold this myself. I bought quite recently, at around 2p, because it, the reason being that it had a profit warning, which is why the chart plummeted.
Mm.
Because they had that big sort of drop from around 4p down to 2p, or even lower than 2p, was triggered by, I think it was a Q3 warning, effectively. They're very dependent on royalties from the car manufacturers, but they can't time, you know, the Seeing Machines doesn't control in any way the timing of when new models are launched. And as you would expect, you know, making cars subject to delays, blah, blah, blah. So it collects in a small royalty, and that's now being driven by legislation, primarily in the EU. But as I say, they did have that considerable setback where you suddenly thought to yourself, oh God, you know, is this all a big story, you know, and they're not generating the growth. Well, anyway, the reason I bought in was because the Q4 update showed a strong rebound, which validates what management was saying about this just being a one-off soft quarter. So the growth seems to be back or getting back on track, and you've got an absolute deluge of new models kicking in, which will be mandated by EU laws to contain this equipment. It's eyeball tracking, very sophisticated, and Seeing Machines, there's hardly any competition. There's two or three other companies globally. They seem to be the world leader. And crucially, they've got two major industry partners that have bought equity and or injected convertible loans. Now, if big industry players are pumping money into this thing, that tells me all I need to know. Mm. You know, they've done the due diligence for me, and it got down to a reasonable price at 2p. It's still speculative, and the track record of the company is diabolical. So it really is. So, yeah, have you got anything to add to that, Paul?
Well, it's quite, I mean, the end market cap is 122 million, pounds. Exactly. It's not actually insignificant. It's super liquid, obviously, at that sort of like given the price. I guess the sort of the big picture sort of question is for sort of driver assistance, Is it ever going to be impacted if we go autonomous driving, i.e., you know, cars which are actually self-driving themselves, or trucks and stuff? And the answer to that is, well, it all depends on what the law allows and how good they get. But if it's done as a recurring revenue model, then if you get onto a lot of cars and you're getting an annual sort of like, you know, service fee for those models. Those models will be around for 10 to 15 years anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a one-off royalty at the time of manufacture, I think. So,
is it right?
Yeah, I think so. But there are other verticals that it goes into, for example, aviation and large mining trucks and things. But yeah, the self-driving thing, I mean, I don't know, it feels to me that's still a long way off. I could be, for mainstream motoring, you know, I think most people want to drive themselves, don't they?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I would prefer to drive myself, but it's actually happening, isn't it? Waymo have proved it works out in California and San Francisco, these are like masses of Waymo self automate, but they are expensive. That system is far too expensive for normal cars. It is actually already happening in China because they're doing it, but how safe that is, I'm not sure. And if you believe Elon Musk, he says he's going to have autonomous driving allowed in US roads next year in 2026, but he's been saying that for years. It all comes down to how liberal and how free the regulators are going to allow it.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I would imagine it's self-driving cars will only take a niche part of the market
I think a lot of people, I mean, would I give up my car? Probably not, but I'd probably share it with my wife, and then if we want basically just to go down the shops or anything. If you've got basically these parked up, I mean, it's just so cheap. You haven't got to worry about servicing it and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, if you want to drive your XJS classic Jag sort of up the road to get a bottle of milk, then you don't have an autonomous vehicle.
Yeah, I think there's room for both. I think there'll be a big enough. I mean, I don't know. Nobody does, but I suspect there'll probably be a plenty big enough market for seeing machines to make a lot of money. Even if self-driving takes, say, half the market.
True. Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks very much, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for your excellent questions. Apologies, I haven't been able to get through all of them, but hold them for next week. It will be Thursday, as usual, at 2 p.m. Same channel, same people, and talking about different stocks this time. But hope you have a great week in Alderney there, Paul. You got any plans? You going down the local pub there at all this evening?
Oh God, no! I did that at the weekend. Oh, bloody hell, they can drink here, I tell you. Loads of friends. I know about half the village already. No, it's great out here. I definitely encourage people to get out to Guernsey or Alderney if they can. They're lovely places.
There's lots of history there, isn't there? Which is fascinating. Yeah.
Incredible. And you're off for a short break as well, aren't you, Paul?
Yeah, we're going down Devon. So going tomorrow. A bit of swimming in the estuary, which would be nice. But Dartmouth is absolutely fabulous because it's got stuff from the Middle Ages. It's got stuff from the Tudors and Stuarts. It's also got plenty of the naval colleges and the Second World War, lots of history. And the food's not bad and the drink's pretty good as well. So we can't really ask for more than that.
Yeah, great.
All right, then. Thanks a lot then, guys. And speak to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. See you next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.